In shadows deep, where moonlight wanes, haunted England, where the spirits reign, whispers echo through ancient halls, in chilling winds, hear eerie calls. Beneath the moon, a spectral dance, the tower's secrets, a ghostly trance. Haunted England, where shadows play, a chilling tale for every day. The phantom coach on Dartmoor's ride, through spectral mist it does glide. Phantom coaches ride the night, a headless queen in pale moonlight. Haunted castles on the hill, where time stands still and bones will chill. In corridors, a Tudor cry, a haunted lullaby under darkened sky. The gray lady roams the tower's keep, in haunted England where shadows creep. Banshees wail in the old yew tree, a spectral symphony heard eternally. It's time we return to England's glory with paranormal expert, our friend, Neil Story. That's next, right here on the Best in Paranormal Programming. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is My Paranormal 60.
I'm not going to stand here and listen to this baloney.
He won't float. He doesn't stand for baloney.
Sounds like a lot of supernatural baloney to me.
Supernatural, perhaps. Baloney, perhaps not.
Hello, my little darklings. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Paranormal 60. And it's an exciting time because I love when I'm able to reconnect with friends and friends that have a unique perspective on history and its mysteries, the hauntings of ancient lands. And when it comes to that, there's only one guy I know I can always lean into. And not only are we going to get to hear him tonight on the show, but if you'd like to actually join us later on this year, we will be doing our Eerie England tour. You can join me and Neil Story as we travel throughout England, visiting some of the most historic and haunted sites on the planet. And as if that's not enough for you, you can also join us at the Festival of the Unexplained. It is the UK's premier paranormal conference. We will be speakers that weekend, and it's part of the tour you can sign up for. If you're already over in the UK and you just want to come to one of the best paranormal conferences in the world, you can go to the Festival of the Unexplained. For all the rest of you that want to see more than just the conference, then you definitely want to sign up for our Eerie England tour. Tickets are on sale right now. You can find information over at darknessevents.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Story. Hey, Neil, how are you?
Dave, what a welcome.
Thank you.
Lovely to see you. Yes, in the finest of fettle, and greetings from England.
It's great to see you again and your wonderful mustache. Thank you for being here. I will have you know that it is only for you that I go to poetry and prose to introduce you. I think I've done
nice to feel.
Three years worth of shows and two times I've had you on, I think I've introduced you with a little poem. So I try to keep it classy around here, Neil.
Well, absolutely. Have a little gin and tonic on me. There we are.
Nice. Let's get into a few things. I'm just curious, Neil, you know, you've had the chance now to travel and investigate and research things for your own work. You've had a chance to travel with me and go to haunted locations where we've investigated and actively caught EVP. It's also brought you into the realm of TV programs and working with some of the biggest kind of profilers out there on YouTube and different social media. But you're working a lot with the crew and in front of and behind the scenes of Help My House is Haunted, right?
That's right.
Have you seen a change in the way that you perceive the paranormal and supernatural now that you've become even more steeped in it, that you've gone from just the historian but an active participant in engaging with the spirits?
Well, my first investigation into the paranormal, we used to call it ghost hunting back in the day, was 1988. Mm-hmm. And it was very basic equipment back in those days, a great big video camera with a brick that goes in the side. And there wasn't any specialist equipment at all. It was very natural ghost hunting, using your natural abilities. Mm-hmm. And I still do that. I still do that. But having had the chance to travel, having had the chance to see, I think, some of the most remarkable and haunted places in all of Great Britain, I've seen things that I can't explain, things that are absolutely beyond the expectations of this once Norfolk-based historian. You know, it's been an incredible journey.
Have you ever gone to a location that you've heard since you were a child is so haunted, and you get there and by gum, there's something happening. You hear the EVP, you witness the footsteps falling down the hall. Has that ever happened to you where you just kind of expect this is going to be nothing more than a farce and it turns out to be a phantom instead?
Wow. Now that spun it a little bit there because I'll tell you, well, I've wanted to go since I was a kid. And the name works. It's called Hellfire Caves.
Mm.
I had never, ever been there before. And the name is so redolent of history, of darkness. Right. And this is where the Hellfire Club, the main man was Francis Dashwood, this occultist. He dabbled in the dark arts and he brought others in there with him to take part in these rather bacchanalia and drinking and feasting and strange practices. And Lord knows what doors they opened. And I've been wanting to go there for 40 years since I was a kid, and I've never made it. It's crazy. It really is. And the first time I ever went was with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what it's like when you go somewhere and you think, what are these caves going to be like? I mean, are we going to get anything at all? Is it going to be naff? It exceeded anything I could have possibly expected. We posed for one photograph on the way in.
Right.
And instantly there was it was like a wraith, wasn't it? We didn't see this. And there's the shape of a wraith just in front of us.
Right.
And we saw it just moments later when they showed, and we saw on the way out. Do you remember there was photographs of this light, this orb of light that left a bit of a trail behind it? No one saw it. I think maybe one of the crew saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But she had the sight. The rest of us didn't. It didn't illuminate anything, but it's on the photos. It's,
right.
What on earth is it? And we went to the inner sanctum. Now, this is the inner temple where they've got like hinges on the exterior of the door with a throw bolt. So once upon a time, that steward, who, by the way, when he died, his heart was put in an urn and the Hellfire Club would drink their wine out of the big urn with the heart intact. Well, you have toes in America, for goodness sake, in some of your bars.
Wait, what? What?
Do you not are you know about
are
this?
You? Are you hearing this from Eric Chachi and Greg and Marty? Because they might just be spinning a yarn for you.
I've heard of those guys. But this is true. Somewhere out in America, where they had gold prospectors, when they were clearing out one of these old shacks, he'd had a toe that rotted off. And so they gave the toe to this bar, and the drink is this. You drink this sour toe whiskey or whatever it is, and it's no go unless the toe touches your lips.
Okay, what is wrong with people that you have a rotted toe? That should automatically tell you there's a medical issue with this.
Yeah.
You know what's the best thing? Let's dunk it in alcohol and drink it till it touches our lips. That shall be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, we are a weird lot, the human race. We are.
Luckily, we're not doing that in the UK.
No.
In Great Britain, no, we'll be going to somewhere where they drank out of a goblet with a mummified human heart in it.
Yeah, that's so much weirder.
Yeah. When
you think about it. Yeah.
In the zone.
Well, tell people and explain to people what the Hellfire Caves and the Hellfire Club. Can you give us a little bit of that background? Because obviously it sounds almost demonic in nature. But give us some of the insights.
This will take us back to the 18th century, late 1700s. And Francis Dashwood, he's got a lot of money, okay? He's an aristocrat, and he's of the Despenser family, the baronets, and he's got a lot of money, and he buys this mound, this hill, which within it it's a chalk bed, which is quite easy to carve out. It just takes a lot of people and a lot of work. And he carves this kind of warren, this maze, through, including a huge area where they used to dine, this central area. It's incredible canopy in the chalk. And through there, then you go to the inner temple as well. It was designed for this club of gentlemen who would indulge in these dark practices. We're not sure all of the things that they did, because it was like a secret society, but it was very dark. And they would embroil local women. And I've got a horrible, horrible feeling that we know one called Suki. She allegedly died of shock when she was down there. Somebody dressed up as a devil or dressed a baboon as a devil, and it jumped out at her and she died of shock. Or was something darker done to her and they paid the silence money? Who, you know, they've got the money to buy people from the streets of London, take them out to these caves, whatever practices took place, and they could be buried in the grounds for all we know. It's dark. It's dark, dark stuff. What the practices were, what doors they opened inside the Hellfire Club, we don't know. But they, and once you get through it, there's an area of stalactites and there's statues and the walls feel this curious damp. But when we were in that inner sanctum where they practiced these weird rituals, you had an EVP. You had your recorder. The voices that we obtained down there, there were children, multiple children.
Mm-hmm.
What are these kids doing down there? Young kids talking about the zoo. Do you remember this? Was one of those children told that they were going to go to the zoo and they were taken down there? Oh, my word. My word, what a place, what an atmosphere. But I think everybody, and we can't guarantee this, could be flat as a pancake next time. We all know that from paranormal research. But it was
walking through that threshold, passing through that gateway, you could feel there was a palpable change in the environment, not just because you're going into a deep, dark cave. And it's not dark. They have it beautifully lit up, and it's historic and really interesting. And you get to just be in there. And with our group of 20 to 25 people, you've got a lot of area to spread out. And many people were breaking off in groups of two or three to go explore. And Neil and I wandered through visiting all the groups and running EVP recordings, doing photographs, capturing instances of the paranormal. I kind of feel like that type of place doesn't let go the ghost. I feel like there's always something present there, something that's aware of who we are and what we're doing there. And it is just as fascinated by us as we are by it.
I think you're absolutely right. Chalk is porous, as everybody probably knows. That's why you have that damp on it. But I think there is something to be said for what's known as the stone tape theory. It really comes from a film, but it's considered a paranormal feature of researching any location, that something can permeate walls or wooden staircases and leave some trace of a dramatic deed, a murder, somebody died falling down the stairs and breaking their neck, and an execution being hanged from the banisters or something, or suicide. These walls are porous.
Mm-hmm.
Every wall is porous there. And to me, it just seeps. It oozes history, but it oozes, it's redolent of that darker past. And you're quite right. It's nothing to do. The temperature's fairly even down there.
Right.
It's beautifully illuminated, so it doesn't spoil the ambience of the place, but you can find your way around. But I kind of divide it off a little bit because I like to circulate around and say hello to people, you know, when they're researching. And I kind of got lost. And I think that's why, that if somebody did escape from that central area and tried to run away, those tunnels can be so confusing. I mean, we're all safe now. You can easily find your way.
Right.
But
it is disorienting.
Oh, totally. And if you think the way that they were lit at that time, it's, yeah, disorientating, disturbing, but an ideal place for paranormal research and to have the time to soak up that atmosphere. That's so important, to be able to use the natural skills, use the technology. But to be honest with you, if you've just got a camera phone or a digital camera, it's well, we can't guarantee, but the results last time.
Right. Well, you've sold me, Neil. Let's go back. When we do this next tour, let's make sure that one of the visits is definitely to the Hellfire Cave so that we can
get back. We're going. Yeah.
And you know what's fascinating to me is now science is looking at things through a different lens and a different scope. They've started to consider the fact that maybe everything has kind of a living conscious to it, a consciousness that exists. We know that trees and plants and things can retain these memories that, you know, and it's so fascinating. And you could look through Carillion photography, you take a leaf and tear the leaf and take a photograph, and the leaf still appears to be a complete leaf because its energy continues to exist, even though the piece of it has been parceled off. So that tells you that when you're in a place like this that is rich with the environment and moisture and the like you said, it's picking up the blood, sweat, and tears of the workers and the people who entertain there and might have been terrified for their life or had the grandest of all days there. There are these little echo remnants. And it may not even be so much as we think it is, as ghosts, but maybe it's the memories of the place itself that contain this power.
I think it's all of the above. All of the above. I think there's resonance. I think there's trace in the walls. All of the things that happened there, the intensity of those things, they are in the walls. But I also think it is haunted. We all felt something there. And if you imagine, we can get a good number in that. It's not a huge part that in a temple, but that would be the sort of number that they would have had. And if you think about that kind of resonance of getting the number of members of the Hellfire Club gathered around there, and we had small cultures. We had people from Native American backgrounds, African American backgrounds, Central European backgrounds, where there were beliefs in very ancient religions. We had Wiccans, we had witches, and what an incredible group! And the energy that our group brought to that, and helped unlock, I think, was truly remarkable.
When we enter these sanctums, these areas that were held in such high regard, we are, in a way, inserting ourselves into the history books, aren't we? We become part of that book, many, many pages between us and its original incarnations, but we're still there, and you're going to have these moments where things may bleed through. And, when you're talking about the fact we're getting children's voices and we're hearing them talk about the zoo, it often makes me wonder, were we really hearing ghosts, or were we hearing children that had visited there?
Yes.
That were going there for a field trip to see something and thinking, oh, I wish it had been the zoo. Why don't we go to the zoo? And they're griping and grousing as children would, but they're in this remarkable environment without a clue or true understanding of just how remarkable this spot is. And maybe the walls recorded even that moment, the irony of that moment. Yeah.
You never know. I think the most powerful traces are those who lost their lives or had their lives taken from them, or those that knew it. Excuse me. Those who knew it very well. We always have to be careful that the voice of a child in a paranormal investigation is not always a child. Mm-mm. So Lord knows what might have been unlocked.
Well, since we're kind of talking about this this element, let's roll over to something that fascinates me. I can't put my finger on what it is about the location, but Stonehenge.
Oh.
Right? Now, obviously, I think it grabbed the imagination of the world because it was on every kind of unsolved mystery and sightings and in search of and everything about all of the possibilities of what it could be, what it might represent. And I didn't know how I would feel the first time I visited Stonehenge with you, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there is this sense of awe when you get near it that you can almost And I know it sounds woo-woo, folks, trust me, but you can almost feel that there is the memory and an energy in this location. Now, I'm curious, O'Neill, do you think that this place is so charged right now from all of us, all of the visitors that walk through this gate with expectations? Or do you believe that, no, this is a central point that is very powerful and is going to resonate with those that are open to that experience?
I think when you stand near Stonehenge, mm-hmm. you get to see it in the context of its landscape. And you'll see the various burial barrows all around there. Mm-hmm. Now, these are ancient. These are stone. They're Bronze Age. You know, they're incredible. They are all around there. So this is a place of enormous importance mm-hmm. to ancient people. Now, it's said that we only use a fraction of our brains today. And there's a there's a certain amount of discussion about, did they have telepathy?
Right.
There's even a discussion in some of the ancient alien forums of how did those stones get there? Because they're not local stones. They don't come from a local quarry. The nearest place they've found is over in Wales, which is hundreds of miles away. It's the Preseli Mountains. And these things are hewn out. Now, if this is the Stone Age that we're talking about, you know, this is ancient, ancient stuff. It's comparable with the pyramids, you know. This and of course, as an icon of the paranormal and the paranormal journey that many of us have had, they are. I mean, there's even a suggestion that maybe they were transported there by ancient aliens. Who knows? Or were they put on rollers and loyally and religiously, literally religious with reverence, taken to this point? But why this point? Now, what's intriguing about that is not only the landscape and all of those burials, but the number of sightings of UFOs, UAPs, that have been made there over the years. And we're not talking about a glimpse. The things are hovering over this area, that they're being seen in the sky around there, and it's pretty regular. Now, okay, lenticular clouds, cloud formations, we know, sunspots, there's all sorts of explanations, but silver discs that are kind of like a huge silver smartie is hovering over there, that it's clearly got some sort of windows or some sort of, I'll call it a porthole, but whatever it is, it's some sort of who knows right. I'd love to know.
Isn't it interesting that you think incredible. Of okay, you know, one of the philosophies of how the ancient buildings and places were built was using harmonics, and that they were actually using sound wave technology to lift and move these rocks, both in Egypt and in places like Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't that be something? Because that would seem to unlock a mystery of the stone itself. Yes. And you would think that if it's truly opening up the pores of that stone to such a way that it's lightening its load so that it could fly, so that it could glide and be easily moved, what remarkable things it must hold. And explain why it resonates so much with people, because how are we drawn? We're drawn to music. Music can open up memories and ideas and concepts and feelings of love and despair. And if there's this harmonics that has been built into these rocks, it would explain that. And then you've got what we believe might be craft from interdimensional places or space that may also be flying on a form of harmonic resonance that would explain how it could move at the breakneck speeds it does. So these things very well could be like a thumb drive from ancient computers that UFOs could fly over and almost download the history and the understanding of what's going on. And boy,
it's more than a calendar. People have talked of it being a calendar for centuries. It's always been a place that's venerated.
Right.
We think, why are these places venerated? Is this where the ancient aliens used to appear? You know, it's as much as the Nazca lines that this is a focal point, your forum in what was Britannia, you know, Albion, the the ancient Great Britain. This is the heartland. It's why it survived. You think of all these. There are other henges in the country. There were wood henges, even. Mm-hmm. There's one off the coast in Norfolk. There was one near Stonehenge. And there are standing stones, but there's nothing like Stonehenge, really.
Well, there is Macaroni Henge that I made for my mom in fifth grade. She still has that on her shelf at home. But, you know, you're right. It's an amazing place filled with so much wonder, awe, amazement, and it draws such reverence and affection that it's no wonder, you know, and you have to wonder if even if the magic of it is that aliens can't speak to the stones or understand that, it may just be that these beings, whether they are us from the future or beings that live on, why wouldn't they want to see some of the most remarkable places that draw humanity?
Absolutely right. It does make me wonder as well, if you think about it, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. If you think some people will go to all sorts of historic sites around the world, mm-hmm. Tower of Pisa, go to the Eiffel Tower, and there's lots of people looking up. And I dare say there sometimes been alien spacecraft there. Yeah. But it might be because it's passing. There's a lot of people looking up, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen very often there. Stonehenge, oh, Lordy. Oh, Lordy.
We should do is look into next time when we're there in September. We should look into one of these, gather our group. And see if we can call down, put an intention and manifestation to see if we could call one of these craft down, at least into a visual level. It doesn't have to land. I mean, I'm fine with it if it does. That'd be just an add-on to our trip. We can all take a quick ride. I don't know. But maybe we should research these groups that call UFOs down and see if at Stonehenge we can do that. What do you think? Should we try that experiment when we're out there together?
I've seen it done. and it is quite remarkable to see people focus, and it's up in the sky, and you start to, and now do you believe what you see? Because you start to see if it's daylight, if it's overcast, there's twinkles through the clouds.
That's right.
All right, that could be an aircraft, but I think if we've got this incredible funnel for all of our thoughts, what a great thing to do. I've never done that at Stonehenge.
Well, let's do it. We have to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We've got more legends and lore with Neil's story, and we're going to talk about Whitby and Whitby Abbey, two locations we've had a chance to visit in the past with a great haunted presence and a famous mark in literature as well. So we'll discuss that and more. Stay tuned. You're listening to the very best in paranormal programming. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the Paranormal 60. Hello, my little darklings. The year is off to a great start for me. I hope it is for you as well. And you know what? Part of the big change for me is eating better, eating right, and getting the right portion, the right meals, and treating myself the way I should be treated, with delicious foods, not some processed garbage, but actually chef-selected, handcrafted meals that make me feel like I'm eating like a king. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. Huh? Huh? Who likes feeling rushed? 2 minutes, they've got their meal. You can settle in, relax, and enjoy eating the meal now. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. I got to tell you, this week, we had some of the best food I've had in a long time. I got the char-grilled burger and mushroom cream sauce, followed up this week with black pepper and sage pork chop and the creamy Parmesan chicken. Mwah! Chef's kiss. It is to die for. And for my daughter, who doesn't like meat, she's a vegetarian, I got her the tomato and roasted vegetable risotto and the spicy sweet potatoes and peanut sauce. She was in heaven. absolutely loved it. She was skeptical. Dad, not another microwavable meal. No, honey, you're right. Not another microwavable meal. This is delicious. And she now is a firm believer. Two-minute meals. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. And you can get pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and so much more. Sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So do it, my darklings. Join me, eat healthy, and eat delicious food. Head over to factormeals.com/P6050. That's factormeals.com/P6050. And use code P6050 to get 50% off. That's code P6050 at factormeals.com/P6050. You're going to get 50% off. You're welcome, my darklings. A link for this appears on today's program guide. So please support the advertisers who support our show. Hey, everybody. You no longer just have to listen to a show like this to get out and explore the world. You can join us. Unexplainable, supernatural, eerie England is just a click away. That's right. You can go on a tour with me and Neil Story as we go investigate some of the most classic, haunted, and historic sites throughout England. And if that's not enough, if just being on a tour bus with Dave and Neil, hearing stories of the strange and supernatural isn't enough, well, how about if we make a little stop along the way at the Festival of the Unexplained, the premier UK paranormal conference ever. And you want to come on out and see this. This is their third conference. Neil and I were a part of it last year. Neil and I will be a part of it this year. And I'm bringing along more friends. Shane Pittman and Cindy Kaza from the Holzer Files will be joining us at the Festival of the Unexplained, along with a host of other remarkable guests. You're not going to want to miss this. So if you're in the UK or you're anywhere in the world and would like to join us just for the Festival of the Unexplained, you can get information at festivaloftheunexplained.com. But remember, if you sign up to join us on the tour of Eerie England with me and Neil Story, you get that wrapped into our tour. So we do a tour, we get to visit with the Festival of the Unexplained, and then continue our journey on for a few more days as we continue to visit places like Stonehenge and the Hellfire Caves, the Tower of London, and more. So don't wait. Don't sit passively by wishing you would have the opportunity to do this. Jump on the opportunity now. There are payment plans available as well. Go check out darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. Scroll down and see all the amazing sites I'll be visiting this year. And make sure you click on the Eerie England banner or the Festival of the Unexplained for more information on both of those programs. All right, Neil Story, our guest tonight, and this is a special Wednesday night edition. Normally, you'd find the Paranormal 60 news crew here with Chachi and Marty and Greg and Sweet Tea, but this was a cool opportunity. Neil lives in some little, like, hobbit village where there's barely any internet. Sometimes you get it if you pull the strings tight enough on those cups so you can be heard from one village to another. This time, he's in a big town with good internet, so we wanted to connect tonight and do the show for you so we'd get a chance to visit and chat with us. The Tower of London, that's another really cool place that I can't wait to visit. What is some of the haunted history of the Tower of London, Neil? And do you believe it is still haunted to this day, or are those just tales of yesteryear?
Tower of London is the pièce de résistance of castles, really, in Great Britain. If you think of Great Britain's castles, you'll think of a picture of the Tower of London. This is it. This is where the nobles who transgressed laws of treachery and treason, this is where they were banged up. This is where they would spend their last days, weeks. This is where the executions were carried out of people like Queen Anne Boleyn, the second wife of Henry VIII. You'll find there were rebels there. Lord Lovat, out on Tower Green, he was executed. He was a Jacobite rebel. And there's the last man to be shot for spying during World War II. He was shot in a chair, sat in the firing range. I mean, this stuff is redolent with the bloodiest history of Britain. You've got armour, genuine medieval armour, the armour of people like King Henry VIII. Check out his codpiece, folks. It's impressive. Now that it is... Well, all the ladies like it. I mean, it's not my department, that one, is it really? But, you know, you've got to appeal to everybody. Now, listen. All the stuff you see there is the real deal. The stuff that you will have seen, knights in armor and beautiful carved horses that was displayed on. If you believe in psychometry, you're going to be in feet of this stuff. You know, or it's not far away from Henry's armor. You can touch that glass. But the walls... You can touch the walls of the Tower of London inside and out. You can see the ravens. You can see the traitor's gate where they would take the nobles in by boat. And the gates open up and they close behind you, and very few of them ever went out again. This is incredible. There's an old song, you know, with her head tucked underneath her arm, she walks the bloody tower. And that's Queen Anne Boleyn. And she, into the 20th century, when they had sentries on guard there, she would approach them, not always with her head tucked underneath her arm, but there were sentries, and the guys would pass out, absolutely terrified by her. And there was a zoo in there. It's funny we talked about zoos a bit tonight, but there was a zoo. They'd done this incredible, what they'd done in this sort of chicken mesh wire, but they look just like the animals, but they're ghostly looking. And the place is said to be haunted by some of the animals as well. So it's animal spirits, spirits of the nobles, and you never know what noble is going to be around. I mean, this is no joke. You've got a feeling, and it's such a big location that you can still find quiet corners and quite well-known corners of the Tower of London and put your feet on history. You know, and because we kind of do our tour, we know where the sites are. So when the big tour group has gone away, that's when we will go in and stand on the spot where Anne Boleyn was executed, for example. And it's got a nice little memorial there. But we also do things that are not on the usual route, things like the Chapel of St. Peter ad Vincula, which is inside the walls of the tower. And that's where Anne Boleyn was buried, in an arrow chest, and she's now been moved in front of the altar, and there are three queens of England there, including Lady Jane Grey, only a young girl, queen for next to no time at all, and she lost her head too. So it's just redolent with the best of history. It's in the heart of London. You're right next door to the historic Thames and Tower Bridge. A lot of people don't correlate the two. Fabulous, you know, the bridge that does that. The one that the exact guy thought he was buying when he bought London Bridge. You know the one?
Oh, yeah. I thought I did a good deal for him, though. And he bought some swampland I own in the Everglades, too. So,
hey, I'm liking that. And that piece of stone that he pushed off the side and Jack the Ripper popped out and David Hasselhoff had to solve the crime. I mean, that was stroke of genius, my man.
We love this. And listen, folks, this is what's so cool. When you get to go on these tours with Neil and I, Neil is like the supernatural jukebox. He sits at the front of the bus. I sit in the back of the bus so we can keep an eye on our students, making sure that each one of you is cared for and comfortable and happy throughout the trip. And eventually I will lean out and I will say, "Hey, Neil." And they'll turn around and go, "Ha ha, yes." And I'll say, "Tell us about the werewolves of London." And Neil will regale us with tales of lycanthropy. And then he'll sit back down and we'll all just sit in wide wonder as we think about the amazing stories we've just heard. A little later, I'll go, "But Neil, are there really vampires jumping through Highgate Cemetery?" And he'll regale us with stories and the fables and legends and lore of the vampire culture, ghost stories, witches, and more. That's what you get on the bus rides. Plus, I'll be there to tell some cool and weird stories. And if you're lucky, maybe I'll bring my brand new book, Theater of the Mind, Tales from the Darkness, and we'll share some stories, some strange supernatural stories there. So, yeah, I love that aspect of it because there is so much more. As we're making our way from one location to another, we Neil tells us quite a bit of the stories of the places that we're about to visit and or passing by because they're no longer safe to be in or they've been locked off from humanity for centuries. But the stories live on. So that's so exciting to be a part of getting out there and seeing this. I have wanted since childhood to see England. Originally, my goal was Liverpool and Manchester because I was a Monkees fan and Davey was from Manchester and I was a Beatles fan and they're from Liverpool. And I've always just wanted to get out there and I've had the chance now numerous times, 3 times to go to England, going back out there for a 4th journey. And this may be my last trip to England for quite a few years as we continue to roll out new trips and continue to do fun things together. But this trip is going to be a lot of fun for that reason alone. Now, do we know, obviously, and this isn't a stop that we get to go in and explore, but Buckingham Palace, there are stories of ghosts and the strange legends there. Do you know, have you ever spoken to employees or perhaps former employees who are willing to open up to you a little bit about these tales and let you know if it's more of a wink and a nod to keep the tourists or if there is some real meat on the bones of those stories?
In Buckingham Palace itself, it's said to be minimally haunted, really.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few white figures that are said to appear in bedrooms for unsuspecting guests. The most haunted royal property, really, is Sandringham House in Norfolk. And on Christmas Eve, supposedly, the ghosts walk there. But we will probably whiz by Buckingham Palace. We'll do the Royal Mile. In the bus, you know, it has to be done.
That's right.
But no, Tower of London, that's where you want to go. And the East End of London, mate. The East End in 1888 was where Jack the Ripper stalked his victims. And we will be having the finest of Jack the Ripper tours when we are in London. Real experts, the sites have changed, but there's still cobbles in the East End. Cobbles that Jack the Ripper's feet... He would have gone along those cobbles. Oh, yes. And there's still some wonderful historic buildings there. And you will see the sights and learn the stories from the Autumn of Terror, 1888. The story of Jack the Ripper, the world's greatest unsolved series of murders, and arguably the first ever serial killer.
Do people ever see... I would say Henry VIII might have beat him to that serial killer thing, if you think about it. But anyway, I digress. Do people see the specter of Jack the Ripper? You know, the cloak darting around corners? Or do they just see or hear and witness the victims?
Over the years, and I do know quite a lot of the tour guides because I've published on Jack the Ripper. And in fact, I've even given guest tours over the years. Those who have regularly taken tours out do talk of people seeing the figures of the women on the pavements. Not at every stop, but there's one in particular in a place called Mitre Square, where Cathy Eddowes was horribly mutilated. It was the only murder of Jack the Ripper committed in what's known as the City of London. It's the Square Mile. And it's in a courtyard, and it's, yeah, the buildings have changed, but Ripper Corner is still there. The spot is still absolutely identifiable, and that's where they've seen this strange glowing figure of poor Cathy Eddowes laying there. It's actually built on the site of a great church. It was said that she was murdered near the site of the altar. Now, whether that's true... because they said it's the curse of Mitre Square that somebody was murdered on that spot centuries before when there was a mighty church there, and it this priory church, and that maybe this is kind of a perpetuation of that dark deed being enacted again. I don't know about that. It could have been a bit of street doggerel that sold some good chapbooks. But make no mistake about it, we will be in the footsteps of Jack and we will pay our respects to the victims and remember them. You know, we remember people like Polly Nichols, the first victim on Bucks Row, Annie Chapman on Hanbury Street, the Hanbury Street Horror. We'll stand at the sight of her back door. When you stand your back to the building, which is a modern building, but the Victorian buildings opposite, it's absolutely, it's eerie. It really is. And you'll hear of Long Liz Stride, and you'll hear of Kathy Eddowes. And we'll take you to the spot where the home of the last of the victims, and she was the youngest of them all, and it's so tragic, these stories, you know. We must remember the victims, but right. We want to be on the trail of Jack the Ripper. We want to try and find him. Here's an interesting story for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, the last victim, by the way, her name was Mary Jeanette Kelly, the youngest of all.
I thought it was Mary Jane Kelly.
Well, it varies, because we still don't know a lot about Mary Kelly. We don't know who truly her parents were. We only know from the man that she was living with a little bit of her background. So she's still a mystery character, but she's fascinating. And all we know is this horrible crime scene photograph. There is believed to be a photograph of her. Whether that's reliable or not, we don't know. It needs to be tested. But there's a lot more stories to come out about Mary Kelly. We'll find her one day. And the ghost of the Ripper. My great-grandmother, her mum, was training to be a midwife in London in 1888. And when she came back, all of her children sat around, or when she was, you know, in later life, expectantly to learn what, have you seen Jack the Ripper? And this is one of the stories I was told from when I was a kid myself, with all of the excitement that my great aunties and uncles knew of this. Great granny used to say, well, she saw him. He's in the shadows. You'd see him stalking around at night. And if he turns and looks at you, his eyes burn like the coals of hell. And one night he stood and looked at her, and she had to run for her life to escape Jack the Ripper. Now, at that moment, when I'd got all around the town, and she'd say, run for your life, there'd normally be my Uncle Ernie behind me and do that on my shoulders, and my head would pop up like pop-up pirates.
I love that we can have some fun with it.
All of my knowledgeable life.
Right. That's amazing. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got some more stories to tell. And as I said, we're going to stop by Whitby, which is the site of many hauntings and Bram Stoker's Dracula, as he makes his way on shore to England. We'll hear a little bit about the history and the literature. And then before we say goodbye, Chillingham Castle will be the last visit we talk about today. We'll do that next, right here on the very best in paranormal programming. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the Paranormal 60. Okay, my little darklings, I know, just by looking at me, you think that guy does not work out. Well, you'd be right. And aside from just looking at me and knowing I don't work out, I was quickly reminded of the fact that I don't work out because I've got subscriptions to not one, not two, but three different apps to help me maintain my weight and get in shape and feel better. Three apps that I worked diligently when I first signed up for them for about a week and then forgot all about them. But thankfully, Rocket Money didn't forget about them. I'd forgotten all about three, not one, not two, but three different subscriptions to three different organizations. And here I am, still dumb, still fat, and losing money every month without even paying attention to it. I think some of you out there might understand the predicament I'm in, and that's why you need to get Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over all of my subscriptions and a clear view of exactly where my money is going. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved now a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com rocketmoney.com/P60. That's rocketmoney.com/P60. rocketmoney.com/P60.
In winter's grasp, a chilling tale unfolds. Wanted Magazine's issue 40, Secrets to be Told. Al Capone's ghost, in shadows it creeps. A spectral mobster, where darkness seeps. 14 signs of a poltergeist's might. Haunting whispers in the silent night. Pascagoula UFO, 50 years gone by. A cosmic encounter, reaching the sky. The ghost train of Tate Bridge, echoes in the mist. A phantom journey, where souls exist. Wanted Magazine issue 40 is out now. Available from selected outlets and bit.ly/wantedmagazine. Don't be normal, be paranormal.
One of my favorite things about Neil's story is that he is a man of unlimited knowledge and a wealth of love and understanding for history, but he also loves literature. And it was his fascination of Jack the Ripper and Dracula that originally brought us together those many years ago, as I was on a foreign trip, and I think I was in Scotland or Ireland visiting one of the castles, and I saw this book that just called out to me from the shelves, and I picked it up, and I it was just this amazing thing, and it was about Jack the Ripper and maybe ties to Dracula, and I knew I had to speak to Neil, and I got him on the show, and he's been a friend now for what, a decade, and I've been so lucky to have this guy in my life, and we went on the trail seeking Dracula, following the course that was plotted out, of course, in a fictional novel by Bram Stoker. But it was fascinating because one of our stops and one of my favorite stops was to Whitby, and kind of give people a little bit of the history of Whitby. And, you know, I think it's fascinating to know, if you're a fan of vampires and you're a fan of Dracula, this is where it started. Bram Stoker was there. We could see his home. We can see his bench where he sat and overlooked everything. It's amazing to get out there and get a chance to see this. But talk to us about the history of Whitby itself.
I'll set the scene for you. This is a coastal town in Yorkshire, England. It's got quite a rugged coastline, so it's quite rocky there. And when you look from where Bram used to sit in the mornings, across what's known as the River Esk to the mouth of the river going out to sea, they've still got fishing boats going in and out of there. And the houses, it's like there's been a preservation order put on the place because it doesn't change. You can compare photographs from the time that Bram Stoker knew it and knew that view, and it hasn't changed. The roofs, when the sun is out, it's like the terracotta of the Mediterranean. These lovely white-fronted houses, and you see the little bit of the beach where a ship called the Dimitri was beached. It was wrecked. Mr. Stoker rather liked that, and that becomes the Demeter. So where we on our day, now I get so excited. I mean, I've written a biography of Bram. I've written Dracula Secrets, which is where he knew Hall Caine, who was a great friend, and a very intimate friend, with Francis Tumblety, the special branch number one suspect for Jack the Ripper. Lord knows what's in those letters we found. There's 50, 60 letters. Unpublished before, the greatest collection of Ripper letters. Anyway, Bram Stoker is all part of that story, and he based some of his story of Dracula on the fears that were generated at the time of the Ripper murders, because let's face it, he was the acting manager of the Lyceum Theatre, which is in the heart of the West End. This is where you had Richard Mansfield, and he played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on the stage in 1888, a man who becomes a monster at the drink of a potion. So this is where Bram was at work. Where did he go on holiday? Bang on, this photograph. This is Whitby Abbey. You can imagine him arriving there. He came up first on his own, and he walked around St. Mary's Churchyard. Now, the churchyard is just down the slope from Whitby Abbey. And as he walked amongst those tombstones, he wrote their names down. He got in touch with the Coast Guard so that they could tell him about the wreck of the Demeter. And let's face it, one of the inspirations. Now, Bram has a number of inspirations for Castle Dracula. If you're going to think of Dracula's castle, you've got to think of places in the UK. You've got to think of Edinburgh Castle, Slane's Castle in Scotland, Bram's imagination, and Whitby Abbey, which is, if it's not Drax Castle, it's Carfax Abbey. Let's face it, this ruinous old abbey that Dracula buys in the UK. And you can, this is not somewhere where there are ropes all around it. You nope. can walk through the columns of the ruins of Whitby Abbey. And there's even a medieval tomb there, carved out in the shape of one of the old priors. And it's known for people to lay within that. Shuffle their shoulders in, Mr. Schrader. Did I happen to see you do that?
I don't know what you're speaking about.
Did you happen to shuffle into that one?
Very uncomfortably, but I did.
Well, it's not built for comfort. You know, it's built as a permanent home
for the day. Also not built for a guy who's 6'1", that's for sure. The priories might have been a little smaller back in the day.
Hey, you know, we Normans, that's what we do. We are little people. The magic is there. That place. It's inspired. So we'd start off, we'd go to where Bram stayed in the Royal Crescent. We'll walk around the corner to where we like to have a drink in the Royal Hotel. We'll sit on his bench and we actually do a reading of what Bram Stoker described of the River Esk and the view across to the Abbey. And you'll be in the hot spot because this is where Mina Harker could see her friend Lucy going up the long steps to St. Mary's, and there in the churchyard, his eyes as red as hell itself, she saw the monster that was Dracula. And she has to dash across from where the bench is, or nearby, across the Esk, get up there. Now, we're not going to have to dash, because we've got coach travel. It's great, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Get the nice view of the where Bram stayed, nice view of the hotel, lovely view of the River Esk on the coach. And it takes us over the other side in absolute comfort, coach luxury. And there we are at Whitby Abbey. And then we can walk down the slope from Whitby Abbey and walk around the churchyard that Bram Stoker walked around. And Mike, you've seen those tombstones. They're bonkers because the wind and the rain and the salt has got in them and they're all kind of gnarled up. You can make the names out on them and there's all sorts of weird symbols. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. And you can walk along the cliff top where Lucy engaged with Dracula. I mean, this is, come on. And you walk down the 199 steps and then go around Whitby and buy some beautiful jet and amulets and go to the Whitby bookshop and buy my books and other great books on Dracula. Although mine is pretty good, you know. But you know what I'm saying? I don't take myself too seriously, folks. But we have the best. And it's historic. It's still got its cobbled streets. It's got brilliant jewelry. It's got nice food. I mean,
it's an amazing town. And again, you know, I know part of you are like, but Dave, it's a novel, but you understand that this is all based in reality and you get to walk the streets that Bram Stoker walked. And although he never made it to Transylvania and Romania where he based much of the story, he did traverse the streets there in England and knew these areas. So it's really a remarkable opportunity to stand there. And I will tell you, there were times as you stand there looking out over the water with the abbey to your back that you can almost feel the presence of spirits standing alongside you. There were times, I mean, I got very emotional feeling a few times and had to step away from the group because it felt like we were not alone.
Yeah. And we had a big, busy group, but there's so much space there.
Yeah.
You will be able to inhabit your own area if you want that quiet time, that time to really feet, and you can walk right around the abbey. You can touch it. You can feel the resonance from those stones. Feel all of that history, the beyond the fictional history.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now I'm not saying he haunts the place, but the spirit of Bram Stoker is absolutely there. It's just. Oh.
Agreed.
I'm a writer, and I lose the words because it is truly magical. And you will feel it. And I hope the sun shines. If not, bring your brollies. It's still great, no matter what the weather. And if you've got clouds, great, because they look amazing above the Abbey. It looks brilliant in the sunshine. It's just one of those places that I'd wanted to go for years. I'd gone briefly with an old friend of mine before we did, but to share it with you, Dave, that was, and our group. I mean, everybody.
Right.
That was one of the big highlights of the tour that everybody's taken away with them. And they do some nice beer there. We can go and have a Swifty.
And Swifties are known to help you see the spiritual side more easily on these investigations. So we'll be making stops for many Swifties along the route. Now, for those of you that are Taylor Swift fans, we are not stopping to listen to Taylor Swift music. If it's playing on the jukebox, that's fine. But no, Swifties are nice short beers that we can all imbibe in. We've got just about 5-6 minutes left together, and I want to talk about Chillingham Castle. This has caught the attention of us because it's been featured on so many haunted TV programs and investigative shows. But in your honest opinion, Neil Story, historian, paranormal researcher, and lecturer, is Chillingham Castle haunted?
Yes, but not by this John Sage character. He does not exist. He doesn't exist. There's no historical record of him. Torture's actually illegal in Britain at that time. Tower of London's a different matter. But no, he's probably a construct. Because I think because Aleister Crowley, the great beast 666, the man who described himself as the most wicked man in the world, well, he knew one of the earlier baronets. He used to come and stay there, and he frightened the baronet so much about it. Oh, you ain't coming back here. But did they shut down properly? Did they use their ring of confidence properly? Hey, did they maintain the circle of trust? No, I bet they didn't. So Lord knows what walks around there. Be careful. It's said to be haunted by a witch. There's a portrait of the witch. And people even take a fir cone out of the ground, find that strange things can happen. Now, that's me having a little bit of a josh with you there. But what I love about Chillingham, it's genuinely haunted and it's genuinely old. It goes back to King Edward, the Hammer of the Scots, Edward Longshanks. His bedroom that was built especially for him is there. We can go and stand in that room in our time. Yeah, it's not a room. This place is resonant. It resonates with history. It has manifestations that look a bit like cigar smoke in there. I mean, it's no smoking inside this property, hasn't been for years. No fires going on in it. It's a weird mist that gathers there. It's got a big wooden kind of chandelier, you know, it's not ornate, it's wooden. And the thing moves from side to side. Absolutely, it's incredible. Cold spots. If you want to bring your dowsing rods, bring your dowsing rods, bring your pendulums, see what's going on there. And the Duchess of Tankerville, back in the 1920s, recorded in a little booklet that was published, the ghosts of Chillingham Castle. So we know that they've got a wonderful history to them. And we will have words and we will get to go somewhere that not everybody gets to go, because I know the main guy there. That's my mate. Lovely chap. And I had special permission to go down into the old larder. Now, it was kind of converted into a bit of a bar, but it's not really used very much now. And it's through this little latch door. And you go down. Now, years ago, that's where the family silver used to be. One night, a servant was fast asleep in there. And they used to lock the servant in. He's woken up by an elderly lady who wants water to drink. And the servant, yes, my lady, and he's half asleep. And he thinks, hang on, I'm just tipping the jug of water into the glass. And how did she get in here? He turns around and she's gone. He wasn't the only servant to experience that. There's also the ghost of the radiant boy. His skeleton was actually found in the walls of one when they were doing some restoration. In fact, they found several bodies in the walls of that building. There's a cell with an oubliette where they used to drop the bodies down into the ground below. So you've just got to bust your ankle, bust your leg, and you die of shock, or they might kill you down there because they were hungry. It's very dark, and it's so well worth a visit.
So come on out. This is going to be part of our Unexplainable Supernatural Eerie England tour with me and Neil Story, the one, the only. This may be the last time I go out there for the next 4 to 5 years, and I would love to share it with you, my darkling. So if you've been on the fence about wanting to go to England and experience something remarkable, then I encourage you to join us as we go back for Eerie England, our fourth trip together, Neil and I, as we hit new locations and favorite locations and what I believe will be one of the best adventures of your lifetime. And remember that during the entire tour, we're going to be stopping in for 3 to 4 days at the Festival of the Unexplained at Bosworth Hall. And we will be there. We actually got to investigate Bosworth Hall when we were there last year. And we were capturing insane electronic voice phenomena with large groups of people surrounding us, voices that were calling out in anger, in anguish, yes, in fear. These spirits are still there and they're walking those halls. And you never know when you might have an experience, especially if you're staying there at Bosworth Hall. It is absolutely gorgeous and an amazing historical site as well. Neil, it's going to be a blast, and I look forward to seeing you again, my friend, and doing this and having this tour with me. So thank you for agreeing to be a part of that.
It's a pleasure. It is going to be the journey of a lifetime, and I think for both of us, we've been able to have input in which we said, look, we want to go here. We want to share this with our people, places that really get the paranormal interest, the excitement going. You know, these are the places. The main ones you want to see haunted, right? Britain, these are some of the absolute hot spots, the absolute classics. Everything from Dracula to Jack the Ripper to Queen Anne Boleyn with her head tucked underneath her arm.
And there's a promise to you, my friends, a covenant that I will make with you at this moment, that if you join us on this trip, there will be many more stories to be told, many more pieces of evidence to be shared, and that is why you should come in and join us in the safety and sanctity of our supernatural adventures. Thank you all for tuning in and spending some time here this evening with Neil Story and myself. Neil, thank you again for being here, my friend.
Thank you, Dave. All the best, and all the best to all the listeners. Come and join us. It'd be lovely to see you.
I hope that the world is just a little less dark with the light and information that we share here on this program, and that it awakens in you a need, a desire to learn more about the world that we live in, that our world is much more than just the cell phones we hold in our hands, vicariously living the lives of others by watching their videos and photographs. Make a memory for yourself. And if not on my trips, then get out and explore your own communities, your own towns, and learn about the amazing histories that demand to be heard. Just like me. I demand to be heard here twice a week. You can tune in every Monday and Wednesday for the very best in paranormal programming. And thank you for taking me along on your journey. I'm Dave Schrader, and this has been My Paranormal 60.